Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who have come to the realization that none of the world's religious, political, economic, military, or media institutions can be trusted, that they are all corrupt and all counterproductive. I am Yada. If you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, they call us free. It's 877-300-7645. Last week, I questioned IQ al-Rasuli on why the Prime Minister of Great Britain and the President of the United States would come out before any of the evidence has been scrutinized regarding the downed Russian flight in the Sinai and say that it was brought down by a terrorist act and blame the Islamic State. I thought it was fascinating, and the answer is obvious. They want justification for their war. The United States has decided that we're going to send troops into the Syrian conflict. And we're doing so not because what we're doing is working, it's because it's not working. And we want to do so because the United States can't even face the thought that Russia should compete on our turf and try to be the bully of the world. And so we're going to increase our presence in Syria, which, of course, is asinine, because every time that we have invaded or bombed a country to do away with a secular dictator, in fact, any dictator, and to try to bring in democracy, we've created a vacuum of power that has given rise to vicious Islamic terrorism, and we've done it over and over and over and over again. But what was fascinating to me is that they were willing to jump to conclusions that had not been formed by the evidence and blame the Islamic State for bringing down the airplane, because that's the theory that supported their desire to continue a moronic, counterproductive, senseless war. Now, what's fascinating here is manyfold. First of all, the Islamic State doesn't exist in the Sinai. The terrorist organizations, which are all fundamentalist Islamic groups that exist in the Sinai, have just gone about calling themselves the Islamic State. But if they're really the Islamic State, why aren't we bombing them there? We're free to bomb them in Iraq. We're free to bomb them in Syria. But we can't bomb them in the Egyptian Sinai, which is right next door. You see, all they are is acknowledging that they are one in mindset with the Islamic State as a result of being fundamentalist Sunni Muslims. But this was no more perpetrated by the Islamic State than it would have been perpetrated by Al-Qaeda. There is no legitimate connection between the Islamic jihadists in the Sinai and those in Syria. But we're going to buy into the fact that they're using the term Islamic State just so that we can justify our war with the Islamic State, making it sound like it was the Islamic State in Syria that we are bombing that was responsible for this act, when in fact they were not. Now, we don't even know if it was a bomb. We know there was an explosion, and the reason we know there's an explosion is that the explosion can be heard on the voice recorder, and the United States is spying on everyone. And the United States saw an explosion on their spy satellites. Moreover, it appears that the Israelis intercepted conversations between the fundamentalist jihadists in the Sinai and knew that this is something that they wanted to achieve. But folks, if there was a bomb on that airplane, you don't announce it until you have evidence of it. And bomb residue is extraordinarily easy to detect. When the investigators say that there is bomb residue, that they have found the location of the bomb, the device in which the bomb was put aboard the airplane, the location of the bomb aboard the airplane, the detonation device for the bomb aboard the airplane, and the composition of that bomb, and say that the residue and impact area of the bomb are discernible in the evidence, then you can jump to that conclusion. Between now and then, it's propaganda. And we ought not be jumping to conclusions using the propaganda. And it's for damn sure that intelligence isn't. So since there is none of the evidence that one would look for, other than the sound and appearance of an explosion, we ought to be really careful, and we should wonder why our leaders have jumped to this conclusion. Now, someone might say, well, what would cause a bomb or an explosion on an aircraft? How about NICAD batteries? They run away, they explode. There are NICAD batteries on that airplane. What about a short? And a short in any wire next to a combustible source? Kaboom. There are lots of reasons that there are explosions, particularly when the airplane is carrying hundreds and hundreds of pounds, thousands of pounds of Jet A, kerosene. It is extraordinarily flammable. So, I'm not saying that Islamic terrorists didn't plant a bomb. Killing innocent people, killing defenseless people, is the signature act of the cowardly religion known as Islam. It is what the jihadists do. They pretend to be, ooh, we are so brave, we are so arrogant, and are Allahu Akbar, as they strike defenseless, unarmed, and innocent people. Signature move of the religion. So is there a possibility they did this? Yes. Do we know it? No. So politicians ought not be using it to justify their war. And even if it turns out to be one, there is no legitimate connection between bombing and invading now with troops on the ground in Syria and something that was done by fundamentalist Muslims in the Sinai. I want to gloat just a moment. During the interviews with IQ Al-Rasuli, many others have stated the same position, that when the Russians decided that they would enter into the Syrian war, it was immediately assumed that they would have an immediate and positive effect in the war against the Islamic State because Putin was not going to mess around, and that Putin would go right to the jugular. And two, at least amongst those who were properly informed, knew that Putin's strategy was vastly more intelligent, more rational, more moral, more reasonable than Europe's or the United States. Russia has come in on the side of the regime, saying that Assad may not be the best guy in the world, but as we have learned in Iraq, and we learned in Afghanistan, and we learned in Libya, that's learned, those of us who have our eyes open, that would not include Americans, that taking out secular dictators is a horrible mistake. And so Russia is siding with Assad. The last thing that Russia wants is to have an onslaught of Muslims migrating from Syria and Afghanistan and Libya into Russia. And they know when they migrate into Europe, it's bad for the entire continent. But what I said is that while Putin is right in defending Assad, even though he's a creep, that Russia has no chance of success, that Russia was unable to defend its support of a government in Afghanistan when the United States, with vastly less investment, provided weapons for al-Qaeda and the Taliban to fight a proxy war against the Russians and gave them far less sophisticated rockets. And so if fundamentalist Islamic jihadists, and you've got to keep in mind, the Taliban and al-Qaeda combined isn't even a flea on a camel's behind compared to the scope and influence and capability of the Islamic State. And the $5 billion of weapons that were funneled to the Taliban and to al-Qaeda to fight a proxy war against the Russians is a rounding error compared to what Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait and others, including the United States, have provided in weaponry and very sophisticated weaponry for the Sunnis to combat the Assad regime in Syria. And it is a tiny fraction of the weaponry that was seized by the Islamic State in Iraq that America had provided for the Iraqi military. So under those circumstances, I said there was a 0% chance that the Russians would prevail. All that the Russians were going to do was to prolong the existence of the city-state of Damascus and therefore the Assad regime over the city-state of Damascus. And I said, that's predicted. But it will fall because that's also predicted. Yahweh was explicit as he predicted the fall of Damascus, the fall of Greater Syria, and that this would lead to the thinning of Israel at the waist and then a unified Islamic assault by the hundreds of millions into Israel immediately thereafter. This thinning of the Israel will be the United States in particular forcing Israel to give up the West Bank. And of course, God blames all of this on America. And that's the purpose of this, the 18th chapter of Isaiah. So the reason I say I want to gloat a bit is that all evidence now out of Syria is that the Russian endeavor has between stalled and failed. As a matter of fact, it has been counterproductive. And one of the reasons it is counterproductive is because the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis and the Qataris and the Turks are working in harmony to accomplish two extraordinarily horrific goals. The Saudi Arabians and Kuwaitis, via American weaponry, have increased the amount of and the sophistication of the weapons being wielded by the Sunni Mujahideen, the jihadists, in Syria that are in opposition to Assad 100-fold. It is monumental, the amount of weaponry we have given them. And, of course, their ultimate goal is to destroy Israel. And so that is point one. Point two, by making this war vastly more deadly, by putting everyone at each other's throat, but beautifully, wonderfully armed by American weapons, and of course the Hezbollah and Iraq-Iran are using American weapons as well under the Russian military command, we have a hell of a war on our hands. I had mentioned at the end of the last segment that there was more than one reason that the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Turks, and the Americans were supplying in the range of 100 times more weapons and 100 times more sophisticated weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen, the jihadists, and don't think for a moment there's such thing as a moderate militant. And just the very notion of moderate and militant, peaceful warrior, do not go hand in hand. Moreover, in Islam, any Muslim who does not engage in jihad on behalf of Allah's cause ceases to be a Muslim, so there are no peaceful Muslims. So the reason that the United States at all are supplying ever more weapons is because they want to eradicate the influence in Syria of Shia Islam, which was the direct product of America's ill-fated invasion of Iraq. And as a result, when the Russians came in to defend Assad, who is a proxy of the Shiite Iranians, the Saudis decided that, along with the Americans, their allies, that the answer to that was enormous amounts of weapons to those who would take Assad down. But at the same time, the Saudis do not want any of the refugees nor any of those fighters in Saudi Arabia, just as Saudi Arabia, who was the source of the leadership of Al-Qaeda, didn't want Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia after they had prevailed in Afghanistan. They know them. And they know that fundamentalist Muslims are ruthless. And they will stop at nothing to impose Sharia, which is the law of utter chaos and terrorism. So that's the problem. And that with the Russians changing the balance of power, the way that the United States and Saudi Arabia responded is upping the ante and providing the rebels with anti-aircraft weapons, anti-tank weapons, anti-personnel weapons, all manner of sophisticated weapons. And so now we have a larger mess. Now, you might say that that would be counterproductive for Saudi Arabia, because if their jihadists do prevail, they're going to turn on Jordan and Saudi Arabia next. But it's being mitigated to a large degree by the fact that the more hellish the conditions are, the more Syrians flee to Europe. And the more Muslims that flee to Europe, and you notice the Saudi Arabians, the Kuwaitis, who have more land than anyone on earth for a private fiefdom, don't want them and aren't accepting them there, but they are aiding and abetting their migration along with Turkey into Europe, because it's not a migration, it's an infiltration. And they're going to fundamentally change Europe in support of Islam. So this is what's happening. It's happening exactly as I had shared with you. It was going to happen. And there really is no likelihood that anything's going to be different other than the entire war. This is not different, it's just more sinister. The United States is going to put troops on the ground. The Russians who are failing will ultimately have to put troops on the ground. That will dig in both countries. The same thing will happen to both countries as happened to them previously when they made these poor choices. They're going to fail. And the more they fail, the more they're going to claim that they need more resources and more troops and more weapons and more bombs. And on it will go. Speaking of more bombs, of course, the United States likes to fight war by proxy. And when we can't fight war by proxy, we want to fight war by remote control. All sorts of stories have appeared in these last few days about the U.S. being unable to recruit and train the drone pilots. They're called now the chair force, as fast as they're resigning. And the reason for that is that those involved in the chair force hate what they're doing. You know, these are video game players that are now playing a video game that's life and death. They drop bombs that burn people alive, women and children. Innocent bystanders. They're making decisions on life and death without any intelligence, without any due process, without any trial. It's just by remote control, I will look down and decide who I'm going to kill. And you do that day after day after day by remote control, and after a while, it takes its toll on you. And so, of the chair force, the United States lost about 50% more sitters in those chairs than people they could get to sit in the chairs. And of course, rather than explain that, you know, nobody wants to do this job because it's so hellacious, choosing who to kill, knowing that when you pull the trigger of that remote control from so far away that people are burning and their bodies are exploding, that they say that the reason they can't fill it is because the job has a negative stigma in society, and what they need to do is to change the perception of the job. I shared the bits and pieces of this story a couple of weeks ago when it happened, but I just happened to trip over the original article, and there was a little more meat on the bones. I wanted to share a little bit more with you about the stupidity of the U.S. Military. Remember when the blimp broke from its tether and broke loose from the U.S. Army's Aberdeen Proving Center in Maryland and drifted north, dragging its tether lines into power lines and knocking out electricity. Well, it knocked out electricity for 30,000 people. It was pursued by two F-16s for more than 3 hours before it was grounded. I mean, I don't know what the F-16s thought they were going to do. Were they going to go shoot their Gatling guns into it and kill people on the ground? I mean, good grief. Just stupidity in that regard. But did you know how much that blimp cost? I mean, here's a blimp. It is a balloon. And we have two of them. But just that balloon, how much it cost. Now, I know that a lot of people fly much better looking, much more maneuverable balloons than that, like it's a promotional thing for MetLife and for the Goodyear Tire Company. So how much do you think the military's balloon cost? $1 million? $10 million? How about $100 million? $200 million? $500 million? No, you're not even getting close. How about $1 billion? Not because it's the military. That their balloon cost $1 billion. Nope. $2 billion. Oh, you're getting warm. How about $2.7 billion? And how about because there was such a good value, these balloons at $2.7 billion, the military has two of them. Now, they've both been retired. One had already been retired. The other one is now retired. So we have just shy of $6 billion worth of balloons that serve no purpose whatsoever. Now, imagine their purpose. They're spy balloons. Who are you spying on if you have these balloons tethered in Maryland? Ah, but the military says, oh, they're up there to track inbound cruise missiles. I mean, come up with a scenario for me as to what country is going to send cruise missiles inbound over Maryland. I mean, who's going to do that? Do you think that the Russians are going to pop up in a submarine and shoot cruise missiles over Maryland? Under what world is that going to happen? Do you think that the Chinese, who hold trillions of dollars of U.S. bonds, who hold assets in the United States that rival the U.S. government's, that has the United States as their largest customer, that has no ability to project a force, at least across an ocean. They'll soon have the ability to transport hundreds of millions of troops across eastern China and through Pakistan and into Israel, as it was predicted they would. But they have no chance of projecting a force in the United States. They have one aircraft carrier, and it was built by the Russians. And so, you think that the Chinese are going to send cruise missiles here? You think that Europe is going to send cruise missiles here? Okay, I know we're in war with the Islamic State, and the Islamic State's going to project a force using their navy and run cover for it using their air force and shoot these cruise missiles at the United States. That's the plan. Oh, wait a minute. There isn't a navy associated with the Islamic State. And there isn't. They don't have an air force. So who's going to do it? What in the world was the nincompoop thinking in the U.S. government that approved this expenditure or in the military that asked for it? $6 billion for two balloons. And we wonder why our military is so counterproductive. And at the same time, this was being shot out of the sky by the U.S. military. The House of Representatives approved another $45 billion for the Defense Department in 2016 and 2017, actually increasing their budget. Wow. No chance for hope in any of this. Speaking of the U.S. government not being able to do anything right, remember in a time when you could go to the airport 15 minutes before a flight, walk right on, and you were treated like a customer? Well, after 9/11 and King George II imposed the Patriot Act, and we nationalized, we took over and made part of the U.S. government the TSA, yeah, that's all gone. Now you're treated like a criminal. You're searched. You are expected to wait politely in long lines. You have to show up to the airport 2 hours early. what you can take on board has been hugely constrained. You're treated awful. From the moment you show up, like everyone is looking at you like you're a potential suspect to the time you leave. The whole experience is filthy. It's disgusting. And you pay an average about $100 premium for the abuse. Well, how do you think that the U.S. government, and that it can't do anything right, including its own military, is doing now that that screening at airports is no longer a private business, but a public business? Well, in looking at this from an article, U.S. lawmakers and federal watchdogs on Tuesday derided the Transportation Security Administration's ability, or lack thereof, to adequately detect weapons and other contraband during the passenger screening process on the nation's airports. In looking into the number of times people get through with guns or bombs in these covert testing exercises, it's really pathetic. When I say that, I mean pitiful. Representative Stephen Lynch, a Democrat from Massachusetts, speaking Tuesday during a House Oversight Hearing Committee concerning classified reports from federal watchdogs, says, just thinking about the breaches here, it's horrific. The failures included failures in technology, failures in procedures, failures in human error. We found layers of security simply missing. Welcome to the U.S. government. It's all a facade. As I said immediately after 9/11, if you wanted to preclude any terrorist act like this, a Islamic suicide bombing, all you needed to do is replace the cockpit doors with Kevlar and change the procedure that once the flight crew boards the aircraft, those doors are closed and they do not open. You do that, and it becomes impossible for them to fly them into buildings. And once they can't fly them into buildings, then the best they can do is to try to blow them up. But if they're going to blow them up, they're not going to blow them up based upon a carry-on package. They tried over and over again with explosive shoes, with explosive underwear, explosive liquids in carry-on containers, none of it works. In fact, all you had to do to keep that from working was simply to reinforce the area above the wing where the fuel is carried between the passenger compartment and the top of the wing. And then there's nothing that they can do there. And so it becomes impossible to blow one up by carried on baggage. It becomes impossible to hijack one with weapons. Problem solved. You don't need any security under those circumstances, with the exception of searching the bags, that every bag ought to be searched for bombs. But obviously, in America, the TSA is incompetent in even doing that. It's one of many examples, and it was difficult to watch sports yesterday on Sunday because everything was about how much of a debt we owe to our veterans who keep us free, when in fact it's an absolute and total lie. Those who were paid to fight were paid to fight. They owe us a debt, not the other way around. And every single endeavor they engaged in made a bad situation worse, not better. Made it worse in Afghanistan, worse in Iraq, worse in Syria, worse in Libya. So why should we view those who made us less secure, who made the world less secure, as doing a favor, particularly when they were paid to do so? Particularly when they come back and they're so screwed up because they realize that what they were paid to do was so ridiculously counterproductive and immoral, they're taking their lives by the hundreds of thousands. That 600,000 claim to have post-traumatic stress syndrome, raping the government of $3,000 to $6,000 a month, and drugged up to the wazoo. I'm going to tell you, folks, it's all a myth, and it's a lie being perpetrated to justify the totalitarian nature of this country, and its militaristic bent. And yet it's patriotism that drives this foolishness. There's a story that has been all over the news here recently about Ben Carson, the favorite of the Republicans, the leader in the Republican primary, having said some of the most stupid stuff you can even imagine. You know, in his biography and later in his speeches, he claims that he was offered a full scholarship at West Point, except for the fact that West Point has never offered a full scholarship. There are no scholarships at West Point. Everybody goes to West Point is not only goes there free, they're paid. There are no scholarships for West Point. So to say I was offered a full scholarship is to say I know so little about West Point, I know so little about the military academies, that I really shouldn't open my mouth about them, much less to say that I was accepted. West Point has verified that he never applied to West Point, much less was accepted. But then he says, oh, no, it's just unfair because I was, I was in the ROTC and some of the people in the ROTC said I would be a sure bet to be included. Except it doesn't matter how good you are in the ROTC. Doesn't matter how good you do on tests. You have to have a congressman sponsor you. He didn't have any congressman sponsor him. It was an outright lie. We'll be back. But it's interesting that Ben Carson's faithful, the Christian Republicans, don't care that he lied. Matter of fact, the next subject is near and dear to my heart. Ben Carson has endorsed Manitech. Manitech is a company very much like Youngevity, as best I can tell. They make a diet supplement of vitamins and minerals and claim that it can heal and cure most everything. Now, in the case of Manitech, it was sued by the state of Texas. It's a Texas company. It was sued by the state of Texas and lost $7 million in that suit based upon making preposterous claims. And when Ben Carson was questioned about why he would endorse, why he would sponsor such a company that made such bogus claims, especially when he's supposed to be credible in the area of medicine as a physician, he said, no, I'm not a spokesperson from the company. And yet he was paid on one speech just this fall, as recently as I believe October, getting paid in the range of $45,000 to give a speech on their behalf. Until about a week ago, his videos were on their site endorsing their products. You know, the proof is ubiquitous that he, in fact, was paid to endorse Manitech's products. And Manitech has absolutely lost a lawsuit in the state of Texas for making false claims about its vitamins and minerals. And yet he's still the front runner in the Republican primary. And so you wonder, what's wrong? Okay, so Ben Carson is an avowed liar. He's somewhere between wholly and completely dishonest and delusional. I mean, his comments about the pyramids being grain repositories is just flat out delusional. But it's amazing that those who support him say that they trust him. And it brings you to the question is, what is it about people that they would trust avowed liars? And then you look at talk radio in general. Talk radio has become the bastion of this snake oil, largely because top 50 advertisers won't touch it anymore because of the credibility of talk radio and because the liberal, most liberal-minded people, particularly the gay rights agenda, has sought to perpetrate boycotts of the top 50 advertisers on talk radio programs because they can't seem to refute the arguments. They simply have taken the financial wherewithal out of talk radio. And so in the vacuum, talk radio to survive has turned to snake oil kinds of products because the margins are so high. And because without the top 50 advertisers, terrestrial radio stations can no longer make a living on the traditional model of selling advertising, they now have gone to pay for play. And so if you're a radio host and you want a large syndicate, you're going to pay for it. And the only way you can pay for it is to sell products that you receive a disproportionate amount of the selling price goes into your pocket. Therefore, nickels that are sold for a quarter, as is the case with most of these vitamin and mineral supplements. They're mostly pyramid schemes. And so that is what's happened, and it's all happened because of the propensity, particularly of the right-wing Christian conservatives, to believe those who are making merchandise of them, who are playing them for fools for money. They're the ones who are patriotic, who trust their party, who believe in their country, who salute their military, even though all evidence says that all of these things are fleecing them. And when you have a group of people as numerous as white, right-wing, conservative, Christian wackos, willing to believe people who are deliberately lying to them, leading them astray for money, how are you going to fix that? You sure as hell not going to fix it by aligning yourself with socialist secular humanists, because they become parasites, and they're doing everything in their power to further their parasitic notions by creating this class warfare of the one percenters are the ones that are precluding you from having all the wonderful things that you want. What you need to do is take what they have earned and divvy it up amongst yourselves. We'll play Robin Hood. But Robin Hood is thievery. There's no way to resolve these problems, America.